Chapter 30. Walk woke at his desk. Sunlight found strewn papers. He struggled to straighten, the pain so bad he almost cried out. He found pills in his drawer and swallowed two without water. He had had Leah order new pants, shirt, jacket. The scales told him he'd lost 25 pounds. The knocking, he didn't know how long it had gone on for, but there was something frantic in it. He staggered to his feet, tried to stretch, and almost puked with the pain. He sucked down a breath, pushed his chest out, and stepped from his office, and then slumped a little when he saw it was just Ernie Coughlin from the hardware store. "Morning." Walk opened the door to him, but Ernie didn't cross the threshold. "The butcher, where is he?" Ernie barked it, hands tucked into a brown apron. Walk shook the confusion away. "The butcher," Ernie repeated. "It's after 7 now. He gets back from vacation, same day every year. Why hasn't the shop opened up?" "Hunting, archery, right? Maybe he's taking another day." "Dumb bastard chasing turkeys all over. 22 years, Walk, since he took over from his father. 22 years. I've been buying breakfast sausage from him. I take it over the road and Rosie cooks it up. 3 pancakes, syrup, 2 cups of strong coffee."
"Can't you just eat the sausage Rosie buys in?"
Ernie looked at him with something like disgust.
"You see the newspaper? New homes on the edge of town. They'll ruin this place. I take it you'll vote against?"
Walk nodded, yawned, tucked his shirt into his pants. "I'll go see him." Ernie shook his head once and then turned and left. Back at his desk, he dialed Milton but got the machine. Then he went right back to watching security tapes from Cedar Heights. Moses on the gatehouse had given them up without much of a fight. Didn't even ask for the kind of paperwork Walk did not possess. There was almost no movement, but the quality was so bad he had to focus hard in case anyone left on foot. He didn't know the timescales involved, so he faced up to days of recording. He watched the day pass, the mailman, the neighbor with the Ford. Another hour before he saw something. He slowed it right down and ran it 3 times. He knew the old truck well, the Comanche. He squinted and could just about make out the shape of the bumper sticker, the silhouette of a blacktail. Milton. He watched with interest as the barrier lifted. Then he searched real slow. 3 hours later, the angle worse as he left. There was no doubting it was the same truck. 3 more hours before he found the sedan, a close enough match for the 2 men seeking Dark. 10 minutes and he watched them leave. It took 19 minutes to get Boyd on the phone, but only a couple for him to shoot down Walk's request for a warrant to search Dark's place. Walk mentioned the guys looking for Dark. Felt like a rookie asshole when Boyd asked for the plates, but Walk couldn't get a clear read. When he hung up, Walk loosened his tie, then leaned forward and banged his head on the desk, hard enough to hurt. "I feel like I should intervene here." He looked up, saw Martha, and managed to smile. She carried her case laden with files.
"You got any booze in this place?"
She parked herself in the seat opposite. He reached for the bottom drawer and pulled out a bottle of Kentucky Old Reserve, a gift from one of the vacationers for checking her place during the winter months. He found a couple of coffee cups and poured them a measure each. He watched as she drank, already waiting for the subtle flush that crept into her cheeks, the same flush she got when she was angry or excited. Martha May, he still knew everything about her.
"I got nothing," she announced with exaggerated fanfare. "You came all the way over here to tell me that? Maybe I wanted to see you."
He smiled.
"Really?
Of course not. I brought you a dish." She opened her bag and pulled out a Tupperware container.
"Dare I ask?"
"Just some leftover pasta."
"And?"
"Nothing." He blinked, waiting. "Cubanelle," she said finally. "Weak-ass frying pepper. You need to eat, Walk. You're getting all skinny. I'm worried about you."
"I appreciate it."
She stood, paced, told him things he already knew, then sat again. And then he told her about Dark and the tapes.
"Your theory is?"
He rubbed his neck.
"I don't have one. Not yet. I want to look in Dark's place, and I want to know who he's paying all that money to. If I can't get him for Hal or Star, I want him for something. I want him off the street." If he was the one in Montana, there's a chance he's dead. We put him there, and we can establish a link to Star. Maybe the boy heard something. Dark wants him dead. We can use it. I just need my angle. The bank payment? I call the manager. He won't say anything without a court order. No surprise. First Union. You need to aim a little lower. A teller, maybe. He raised an eyebrow. What, you think I don't know how to hustle? I've got all these deadbeat fathers hiding their income, so I go straight to the source. And that works? Not always, but I call in favors. And I lend them, too. Life of a lawyer. So, you know the whole town walk. There must be someone you can lean on. He walked up Main, head down, ignored greetings, stopping only when Alice Owen blocked his path, the dog in her arms. Could you watch her for a moment, Walk? I just have to run and I have to be somewhere. Literally, 1 minute. She thrust the dog at him, the fucking snappy bastard of a dog, then headed into Brandt's Deli. He watched her inside, small talk with the girl behind the counter, no doubt ordering some kind of soybean monstrosity from the new machine while she deliberated over the $20 cheeses. He looked down at the dog and watched the teeth bare, and then back to Alice, who'd run into Bree Evans and was talking animatedly. And then he looked at his badge, and he thought of his days, his fucking soulless, perfect days. He set the dog down, unclipped the leash, and dropped it into the trash can beside. The mutt looked up at him, confusion in its bulbous eyes, and then, tentatively, it took in the wild around, channeled its inner animal, and began to trot its way down Main. Walk left, cut through a vacant lot, massaged his hands, and straightened his back. This was his act now, his side to the world. Pill rolling, slowed down, hard to concentrate on anything at all. He stood outside the small house and stared. He hadn't seen the men work, didn't even know the old place had been remodeled. It had come to him an hour after Martha headed home when he was reading interviews for the 100th time. D. Lane. She'd met Dark in the bank, First Union, where she'd worked as a teller as long as Walk could remember. He called Leah when he realized they didn't have an up-to-date address for her. Felt his heart sink a little when Leah told him Dee still lived at the house on Fortuna Avenue, the same house Dark owned, and served notice on. But it was tired no longer. New windows, new porch, the wood stained fresh and the paint shone, the yard, new grass and flowers planted. There was a gate, a fence, pride in place of despair. She met him at the door before he could knock. Small smile as she stood aside and he went into the house. Inside was mostly the same. Instead of the cardboard boxes, he saw a life unpacked, the photos and the furniture all in their place again. She went to make coffee. He asked if he could use the bathroom, then headed up the stairs. He saw the elder girl's room, Yale Pennant, long time off, but Walk heard both kids were smart enough. And then the youngers, painted pink, new throw on the bed. Not obscene money, but there was a new television and computer. He used to know both kids' names, but found them just beyond his grasp. Back down, indeed, led him out to the yard where they sat at a small table. I know what you're thinking, she said. I'm just glad Dark let you have your old place back. I thought it'd be pulled down by now. Make way for the millions and all that. She sipped her coffee and watched the water like it was brand new, not just newly unveiled. It's a view. Sure is. I almost don't believe it when I wake up. Early now, maybe 5. I like to watch the sunset. You seen it over the water, Walk? Sure. She lit a cigarette and breathed it like it was all that kept her from screaming out. He knew what she'd done. She knew it. Yet there were still lines to run, practice for the most tiresome of plays. So you were with Dark that night. Star, that night when she was shot dead. Dee flinched at that like it was not necessary. We've been through this.
We have.
You look tired, Walk.
He steadied his hand, buried it beneath the table, pulled on his sunglasses as clouds moved in.
He was here that night. What were you doing? Remind me? Fucking.
She spoke without emotion.
A while back, and he might have blushed. Instead, he smiled a sad smile, but he got it. There was no hatred there. I worked my whole... She held the smoke deep. I paid my taxes, raised my children, didn't murder my cheating husband. I never took anything from anyone.
He sipped his coffee, too hot to taste.
You know how much money I make in a year, Walk?
Not enough.
He doesn't pay child support. Is that fair? He hides it all so he doesn't have to pay for the girls he brought into the world.
She looked down.
The Radley kids, are they...
Their mother is dead.
Jesus, Walk.
She dragged a hand through her hair. Thin wrists, veins standing proud.
You're going to make this harder than it needs to be? You got the man already, right?
You didn't think to ask where Dark really was that night. She tipped her head back, mouth a little open as she blew the smoke away.
Did you at least get security?
I don't know what you mean. She met his eye with tears in hers. I could call you in and make you testify. You know what the penalty is for perjury? Maybe he could prove Dark had lied, but it didn't mean shit, not really, not without so much more. She closed her eyes.
There's no family, just me and the girls. No one else at all.
He would not tear a mother from her children. The toll was too great. He knew that from talking to Hal and watching Duchess and Robin. I need something, a favor. It could come to nothing, but I need it. She did not ask what, just nodded once. He reached forward and touched her hand, and she grasped his tight like she did not want to let go, like she could wring the absolution from it. Chapter 31. She slept the shallowest of sleeps each night, so was on her feet quick and pulling on a sweater and jeans when she heard the tapping. Robin slept deeply beside, curled fetal the way he used to in the family room at Vancouver Hill Hospital. At the window, she held up a finger, found her sneakers, and crept down the stairs and out into the cold night. He wore a scarf and woolen hat, his bike propped by the gate.
Shit, Thomas Noble. That was Mary Lou's window you were tossing stones at.
Sorry.
How far did you ride?
I left at dinner, told my mom I was sleeping over at a friend's.
You don't have friends.
I've started hanging out with Walt Gurney.
That kid with the eye?
It's only contagious if you touch it. He wore a coat so thick it was like his body was wrapped with tires. They moved down into the long yard. Behind bare trees was a small fish pond. Robin had sat there an hour before Mrs. Price told him it was not stocked. They sat together on a stone bench beneath a half moon and bright nests of starlight.
You should really wear regular gloves. Not even Robin wears mittens.
Thomas Noble reached across and took her hand and blew onto it, then braced himself, but she said nothing.
You were in the newspaper, all that stuff that happened. I kept the cuttings.
I saw it all.
I wish you were coming back to school.
A look toward the sleeping house, the neighbors beside. Wake up, go to work, and pay bills. Take vacations. They worried about pensions and PTA meetings, which car to buy next, and where to spend Christmas.
I liked Hal. I know he was scary and all that, but I liked him just the same. I'm real sorry for you, Duchess.
She balled snow in her hand till her bones ached.
I'm figuring out my next move. Take it back to breathing. I can't fuck up, I know that much. The girl, Mary Lou, I'd like to behead that motherfucker.
Thomas Noble pulled his hat low over his ears.
I need to get back to Cape Haven. I made a promise to Robin that I'd find us a home for good this time. It's all that matters to him. I asked my mother if you could come live with us, but
she waved him off, gave him an out.
The way she is with the mailman, you'll likely have a sibling soon enough.
He frowned.
I don't need anyone. But my brother is just a baby, really.
You think there's such a thing as a truly selfless act, Thomas Noble?
Sure. You coming to the winter dance with me?
She smiled.
I like winter most, out of all the seasons, and I think we have more than most in Montana.
Why? He raised his bad hand, the mitten covering it totally.
That's why you wear mittens.
Yes.
There was an outlaw, William Dangs, and he was a crack shot badass that held up three banks before they got him. He had one arm at the shoulder, whole thing gone.
Serious?
Yes. Right then she was glad he did not know her tells. She began to shiver. He took off his coat and slipped it round her shoulders. He began to shiver. They might send us someplace far. If we get anyone at all, could be anywhere in the whole country. I'll ride there, doesn't matter where.
I don't need anyone.
I know. You're the toughest girl I ever met.
And the prettiest.
And I know you'll probably hit me, but I think my world is infinitely better because you're in it. Before, it was just kids that laughed, pointed, whispered. But not now. And I know...
She kissed him then.
Her first kiss and his. His lips were cold, his nose cold on her cheek. He was too startled to kiss her back. She broke it and turned back to the frozen pond.
Shut up, she said.
I didn't say anything.
You're going to.
They breathed mist.
Hal said, we begin at the end.
So where are we now?
I'm not sure it matters.
Wherever it is, I hope we can stay here a little longer.
They held hands a while, then stood and walked back down the yard, spring buried so deep. In the house was her suitcase and her brother, and she had nothing else in the world. She could not decide if that made her free or so terribly cursed. Thomas Noble pulled his bicycle from the gate and dusted snow from the saddle.
How did you find me? She said as she handed his coat back.
My mother was talking to your caseworker.
Right. He climbed on the bike.
Hey, why did you come here tonight?
I wanted to see you.
And?
I can read you. Tell me.
I'm looking for him. Dark. Every day after school, I ride to the Radley farm and walk the woodland.
Could be you'll find a body.
I sure hope so.
He freewheeled to the end of the Price driveway. She followed him out into the street. Mailboxes neatly lined. Each had a family name painted on. Cooper and Lewis and Nelson. Robin liked to read the names, to see himself inside.
Thomas Noble.
He stopped, leaned on one foot, and looked back over his shoulder. She raised a hand. He raised his own. When she got back to their room, she found Robin crying. Scooted back against the wall, his head in his hands.
What is it?
Where were you? He spoke between sobs.
Thomas Noble came here.
The bed. She looked over at the bald sheet. The bed is wet, he said, distraught. I had a dream about that night. I heard things. I heard voices. She pulled him close and kissed his head. Then she helped him out of his shorts and t-shirt, put him in the bathtub and washed him. When she was done, she dressed him in clean pajamas and laid him in her bed. He was sleeping by the time she got to work, stripping the mattress down. Walk lay in his bed, wrestling with facts he already knew. Dickie Dark had lied about his alibi the night Star was murdered. Milton had paid him a visit. Maybe the two had gone hunting, but Walk didn't buy it. Milton was missing. Walk had stopped by his place and found it in darkness. There was no one he could check in with, no motel or anything. Milton camped, hunted, moved through the acres in the kind of solitude he couldn't bear in the Cape. An hour from dawn, he stood and dressed, drank coffee, then climbed into the car and drove to Cedar Heights. No one worked the gatehouse during night hours, so Walk left the cruiser beneath trees that swayed against lightning sky, crossed the driveway, and stepped through the smaller gate to the side. No life in any of the houses, not even the place across the street. He moved without care, head up, no doubt caught on the cameras. He did not know if it was the lack of sleep or the way his body tremored, but that morning he did not give a shit for the trouble he was inviting. He moved down the side of the house, opened the gate, and stepped into the yard, and then stalled when he saw it, the back door. A single pane of glass missing. Removed with great care, no noise at all. He thought of the men looking for Dark as he reached in and turned the handle. No sign of anything as he moved through the house. TV off, plastic fruit in the bowl, up the stairs and through the bedrooms, made up like a perfect family had stepped out for an hour so interested parties could get a look at their lives. He checked beneath the bed, pulled the sheets back, and then tossed the pillow to the floor. and then he saw it. Far out of place. Right there in the bed, a sweater. Small and pink. A girl's sweater. He thought of bagging it, taking it, and then explaining it to Boyd. He left it, but made a note on his pad so he'd remember. And then the flash of lights. He ducked low, moved to the window, and heard the car idle. He risked a look. Different sedan, but same too, the bearded guy rolled the window down, lit by the glow from his cigarette. He stared at the house. Walk counted off the beats of his heart. 15 minutes till they backed up, turned, and slowly rolled away. He got the plates for what it was worth. Back in the kitchen, he switched on the lights and searched every cupboard. He almost missed it. Down on his knees, he checked the tiles. No doubt, it was blood. It took 3 hours to get a tech van over, and that was all on favor. Tana LeGros had been at the end of her shift when he called. Walk had once busted her son smoking weed at a party he broke up on Fallbrook. He'd recognized the kid's surname and driven him home instead of writing him up. Tana would be grateful till the day she died. Once Moses arrived at the gatehouse, Walk tried to liaise with the guy, but found the easiest way to deal with his questions was to slip him a 20. He ventured through to the back where he found the small office. The computer was plastic, hollow, as fake as the ideal. Tana came, one other guy with her, young and methodical and eager. The guy stood back and raised an eyebrow as Tana lowered her mask. She pointed in the direction of the kitchen. Blinds pulled, luminol reagent set the floor aglow. Jesus, Walk said. Blood? Yes, Tana said. Is that a lot? Yes. Can you run it? You got a warrant to be in here? He said nothing. Guess I can't remove this tile then. Sorry. I'll swab and hold on to it. You give me something more and I'll work up a profile. Won't get nowhere if it's not in the system, though. He thought of the men after dark. And then his mind ran to Milton. He left the cruiser up on the sidewalk, ran across Milton's front yard and hammered the door. Milton! He yelled, then stepped back into the street and looked at the upstairs windows. He heard a noise behind, turned, and saw Brandon Rock watering his grass. You seen Milton? Vacation. Brandon looked like shit. Dark glasses, stubble, feathered hair, collapsed. You all right? Leah didn't tell you? What? Those two don't even talk anymore. She probably doesn't even know. Brandon slurted. Know what, Brandon? Ed let me go. Walk took a step nearer and smelled the booze. Me and John and Michael. I'm sorry. Brandon waved a hand, turned, and walked unsteadily toward his house. Falling market, failing economy, bullshit. Ed ran the place into the ground. Booze, the women. Used to go to the Ape more than me, and I lived in that place. Walk dragged a trash can over, stood on it, pulled himself over Milton's side gate and dropped into the backyard, feeling his bones jar as he hit the ground. He found the key under a false stone. 5 years back, Milton had taken in a stray, a skinny mongrel that he turned so fat it was put to death a year later. So much meat, it went happy. Walk had agreed to feed the thing when Milton's father passed. Inside. He smelled blood right off. Guessed Milton secreted the scent wherever he sat. He saw a calendar on the wall, 2 weeks, marked, even had a circle on the day he'd be opening up again. Milton, he called it loud, in case the guy was bathing, the kind of sight that had chased dreams with nightmare for all eternity. Nothing in the living room. He climbed the stairs, tried the guest room, a mattress on the floor, no sheets. And then he came to the master. It was neat, thick blanket on the bed, despite the warmth, an old dresser with a mirror above, maybe the kind his mother had used. On the wall was the head of a deer mounted on mahogany. The dead eyes made Walk wonder what kind of man wanted the thing watching over him like that. There was a bookshelf, heavy with texts on hunting, traps, maps of the wild. Nothing on astronomy. He walked over to the window, saw the telescope, the Celestron, and ran a finger along the back. The dust was thick, like he hadn't used the thing in a year. He leaned down, peered through, and took a breath when he found the telescope not angled at the sky, but on the house across the street, on a single window. The window to Star Radley's bedroom. He thought of Milton always offering help, the Comanche, taking out her trash, giving Duchess cuts of meat to take home. Walk always had him down as good, misunderstood, a little off, but basically a decent man. He cursed under his breath as he began searching through drawers. He found the suitcase beneath the bed, hauled it out, and dumped it on top of the mattress. Neighborhood watch. Scrawled in marker pen across the top. There was order inside, the photos cataloged. They numbered in hundreds. Some were Polaroid, some better quality. He picked one up and saw Star in a state of undress, bare chest, just underwear. And that was the theme. In some, she was clothed, working the yard. Some had Duchess and Robin in view. Clear, they were not the focus. He turned from the nudes. Star bent over, Star undressing for bed. Fucking Milton. Some of the shots were old. 10 years of watching. He noticed a couple with a guy she was seeing. Walk couldn't quite recall the name. He guessed Milton hoped to catch them fucking. Instead, got a series of shots of Star kissing him goodnight, then the guy retiring to the living room. And then he stopped. The file marked June 14th, the day Star was murdered. With a shaking hand, he turned the pages and cursed again when he saw they were blank. He took a final look around, then called it in. Leah Tallow took it and sounded shocked when he told her. He'd bring Milton in just as soon as he found him. Chapter 32. They settled into a fragmented life. They trailed in silence each morning as Mary Lou and her brother collected friends on the walk to school. The group stared back and whispered and laughed. One time, Duchess slipped on the ice, tore her jeans, and cut her knee. They did not stop to help. She limped on in quiet, still holding her brother's bag as well as her own. Mrs. Price added a plastic sheet to Robin's bed. It rustled so loud each night he climbed in with Duchess. They met with two couples. The first, Mr. and Miss Colleen. Duchess knew right off that Shelley had worked hard to get them to the table being a play area in the park on Twin Elms Avenue. Duchess pushed Robin on the swing while the Colleens and Shelley sat on a park bench, drank a thermos of coffee, and stared at them like they were attractions in a petting zoo. What the fuck are they looking at? They want us to do tricks or something? Quiet, they might hear. Duchess took a tissue from her coat and wiped his nose, then went back to pushing the swing while Shelley smiled at her. The dude looks like a librarian. Why? Those glasses. He's got a sweater with no sleeves. I think they're too old to have kids naturally, and now they want a second shot. Could be problems with his sperm, or maybe she's barren as the Mojave. Robin stared over. What's barren? Her parts have died off. She looks all right. I can feel the bitter seeping from her pores. Should have frozen her eggs. She won't love us right. But no one else has come. They will. Shelley said we have to be patient, right? He looked down. Right? Yeah, I guess. These people, they get tested, vetted, they take classes, so they know how to parent right. She pushed him higher till the chain began to flex, and he screamed and laughed. She marveled at his ability to adapt, the way he smiled at Mr. and Mrs. Price so much, just the chance they might return it enough for him. She worked hard to keep her temper in check now, didn't say anything when Mary Lou smirked or Henry wouldn't share his games with Robin. She buried the part of her that thought about Hal and the way he had died, and her mother, and the way she had died. She watched old westerns, read her books, knew that lives could be colored so bold by revenge they ate away all the good a person might have once had. It was Walk who kept her from doing something foolish. He anchored her to the good. He kept her aimed toward the future instead of the now. Walk reminded her men could be all good. He kept her from marching over to Shelley and the Colleens and telling them to get the fuck away, that she'd cared for Robin his whole life and didn't plan on quitting anytime soon. Mrs. Colleen raised a hand, and Robin grinned and waved as hard as he could, like he couldn't read what was going on. They'd barely spoken to them. A couple of questions in broad Midwest accents. No way of placing them, just another couple looking for a way to make themselves whole, but knowing right off, the Radley children fell short. "Not the right fit," Shelley said on the drive back to the Price house. Mrs. Price had been pissed at them that evening, like they'd played it wrong, like she was tiring of them and wanted younger, fresher faces to drag to church each Sunday and show off. The next meet was bad. Mr. and Mrs. Sanford. He was a retired army colonel and she was a homemaker with an empty home. They sat on the same bench with Shelley, made small talk while they sized up the kids. The colonel kept laughing and slapping his wife's knee, hard enough to leave a print. "He'll beat us," Duchess said from her spot by the swing. Robin stared at him. "Probably want you to shave your head and enlist." "Could be she'll teach you to bake," Robin said. "Motherfucker. You said that too loud." They looked up at the colonel watching them. Duchess snapped off a salute. Shelley smiled nervously. Early March, the thaw began. Duchess sat at the window each night and watched the steady drip from windows as the color slowly began its return to Montana. Morning broke to cold sun, but sun just the same. Sidewalks melted. Yards emerged from burial. Shadblow shed browns to white blossom that reached skyward. She watched the change, but could see no beauty at all. Duchess moved through her small life without feeling. Each motion so automatic, she sometimes forgot which day of the week it was. She cared for Robin, walked him to school, and ignored Mary Lou and her sidekick Kelly when they cut her down. Her shoes, her top, the brand of her jeans. Shelley came each week. Sometimes she took them out for ice cream and once even to the movies. Robin talked about a new family, how the father would be like Hal, teach him to fish and play ball. He held the belief in his small hands, tighter with each passing day. One Saturday, Shelley took them to see the farm. Probate would take months, so it was still Radley land for a little longer. They swung by to collect Thomas Noble. High spring morning. Robin took Shelley to see the coop and told her of the jobs he used to carry out. Duchess and Thomas Noble walked the wheat fields, no crops planted, just rows of weed and mounded earth. She felt a sadness so profound she could not speak for a long time. Hal, in every step she took, cigar smell as they walked up to the porch and took a seat on the swing. She pushed back, the chains pulled and creaked, and she wanted to cry but did not. She visited the field where the gray once ran. She missed her almost as much as she did her grandfather. After, they left the farm in heavy silence, and Robin did cry. She held his hand in her own. When they got back to the Price house, they sat idling on the street, watching the neighbor kids ride their bikes. It was warming up, summer a while off, but making its intent known. "I've got someone," Shelley said. Duchess could hear something in her voice. Trace, but it was there. Something different. "Who?" Robin said. "Their names are Peter and Lucy. They're from Wyoming, where I used to work. Till now, they've been searching just for one child, but I told them how special you two are." "So you lied?" Duchess said. Shelley smiled and held up a hand. "Hear me out. They're small town. He's a doctor, and she teaches third grade."
"What kind of doctor?"
"A real doctor."
"A shrink? Because I don't want some guy messing with my..."
"A regular doctor in a practice making sick people well again."
"I like them," Robin said.
Duchess sighed.
"You can meet them next weekend if you want to."
Robin looked pleadingly at Duchess till she nodded. They rode Route 5 in her Prius, Medford to Springfield. 100 miles from Salem, they left bright lights and smooth asphalt for bumping down dark tracks that slivered through Marion, and the kind of townships that existed on old maps and nowhere else. Martha slept. When the road smoothed and held straight, Walk allowed himself to glance over, and when he did, he felt the sharp pain that had stabbed at him since the day he walked back into her life. She looked calm, at peace, so beautiful he sometimes fought the overwhelming urge to kiss her. Dawn broke over the Calisade Highway.
Walk was so tired he veered over the double yellows till Martha reached over and gently tugged the wheel.
You should have pulled over.
I'm straight. On the Silver Falls Highway, they watched the sun creep from the hills and color farmland a dozen greens. At a diner, they ate eggs and bacon and drank coffee so strong, Walk felt it sharpen him right up again.
It's not far, Martha said, looking at the map spread out across the table.
They were headed to Unity, a private healthcare facility in Silver Falls, the same place Dickie Dark had been making payments to as far back as they could go in his bank records. Dee had come through, knocked on Walk's door the night before, and given him a slip of paper with the recipient's name. 3 cups of coffee and they left, caffeine coursing Walk's veins as the Silver Falls State Park came at them. Martha navigated, and before long the trees towered beside. Rocks rose above steep banks of green. Walk opened his window to the rush of sound as they passed a waterfall. Another turn and they came to the gates. Walk had called ahead, told them he wanted to look around the place. He gave his name through the speaker and watched the gates swing open. They followed the long road till the hospital came to view, sleek and modern. Dark framed glass, contrasted sand bricks. The place could have been luxury condos nestled amongst the forest. The woman's name was Iker, and she met them at the door with a hearty smile. She'd led them into a vast entrance hall, modern art, a sculpture that could have been an eagle. There was a calm to it all. Doctors strolled by, nurses moved slow. No fuss, no worry. At first, Walk thought it might have been a retreat, the kind of place harried execs came for some downtime. But then Iker was back with them, and she reeled off the kind of work they did, the complex needs of their patients and the round-the-clock care they provided. She moved with purpose, despite the extra 50 pounds she carried. An accent, hard to place, might have been German, but it was muddied by local phrases. She didn't ask who they were there for. Walk had mentioned a relative on the phone, needed help, needed specialist care. Iker told him to come in and take a look around. Nothing formal. The fit was important and couldn't be rushed. Beside him, Martha said nothing, just noted the sprawling day rooms, a bank of elevators, and carpet so thick she felt her feet sink. Iker detailed the history, the proximity to the state park, and the calm it inspired. They were equipped for any kind of emergency, 5 doctors on call, 30 nurses. She led them out into the gardens, which stretched their way down to a stream behind a low fence. Walk saw a couple of porters catching a smoke by a set of doors. Iker shot them a look, and they stubbed out their cigarettes and moved on.
"Can I ask how you found us?" she said.
"A friend of mine, Dickie Dark." She smiled then, white teeth, a decent gap between the front two.
"Madeline's father."
Walk said nothing.
"She's an exceptional girl, and Mr. Dark is so strong after losing his wife like that. Did you know Kate?"
Martha stepped forward.
"Not well enough."
Iker looked sad then, the only crack in a pristine facade.
"She was a local girl, grew up in Clark's Grove. Madeline is her double."
She led them back through the building, signed off with a brochure and a promise to call. Walk did not need to press further. He had found what he came for.
"Will you give him my regards? I hope he's healing up well," Iker said.
Walk turned to her. She read the look.
"I'm sorry, the accident. Dickie was limping, said he'd slipped."
Walk felt the rush then. "When was this?"
"Maybe a week ago." "Some people. Bad luck seems to follow them around."
Iker added another smile, then turned and left them. 15 miles to Clark's Grove, and from there they took a walk along a colorful main street, distant from the Cape, in miles alone. Walk liked the town right off. They found the old municipal library at the end of the street, quaint but tired, like the place was running on handouts alone. Empty inside, dark and cool, the smell taking Walk back to Portola and his 2 years of college. An old lady at the desk didn't look up from her screen, so they headed to the back and the couple of computers. Martha got to work, sitting close to Walk, her leg pressed against his. He watched her, the way she furrowed her brow, the rise and fall of her chest as she breathed.
Are you checking me out, Chief?
No, sorry, no.
That's too bad.
He laughed. She typed quick, Kate Dark. The archives pulled up a dozen matches. They read in silence, the car accident, how Kate died at the scene, and Madeline Ann suffered catastrophic brain injuries. There were photos, the ice. The Ford left the road and headed straight down a steep bank, meeting trees and popping the windshield. The lake behind, the 8, the only calm in that shot. A single photo of the family before. Martha zoomed in close, and Walk was struck by Dark, that emptiness, the hollow gaze. It was all absent back then.
So Madeline would be 14 now, Martha said.
Yes.
Jesus, she's been in there 9 years? Around the time Dark started making his moves, that's a lot of money.
Walk found another article. This one focused on Madeline and the work done at Unity. It said a lot and nothing at all. The girl was kept alive by a machine. Dark was hoping for a miracle. Chapter 33. Harbor Bay. Walk made it there in 30. Didn't flash the lights because Cabrillo was empty. The call came in an hour after he made it back from Portland. He left the cruiser close to the gate and walked past the bobbing trawlers, a shiny bayliner and a line of navigators. Gaps between boards, water slopped beneath. He saw a cluster of catfish turning as an old man tossed what was left of the day's bait. Frenzied water, salt breeze, a sense of dread. The trawler was a 73 Reynolds, but looked newer, fresh paint and blue trim. Andrew Wheeler on the deck, his eyes on breaking waves. Walk knew him a little. Andrew had taken Star out a few times. In the distance was the Cape, the cliffs, land trailing down to the beach, and the King House, commanding all of it. Andrew still worked with Skip Douglas, so old and grizzled, he barely spoke a word on dry land. Skip stepped onto the boards, nodded once at Walk, and headed back toward the lot, no doubt to grab a couple of beers to take the edge off the day they'd had. Andrew came down and they shook hands. Andrew's arms muscled and tan, sunglasses on his head despite the dusk sky. Lights flickered on as Walk stepped onto the boat.
What happened? Walk said. We were out with city people, a group from Sacramento, three of them, childhood friends, out traveling their way up to Six Rivers.
Lobster season ran October through March. There were limits, number and size and weight, but most of the customers just wanted a day out on the water.
We were heading in slow when Skip called me over. The net was caught, happens often, always a pain in the ass. Sometimes I pull on a wetsuit and head in, cut away where needed.
Walk placed a hand on the side, though the waves were gentle.
It was heavy, though. Skip even took off his ball cap and wiped his head, and that guy never breaks a sweat. I grabbed the trawl winch and we got it moving. Then it broke the water. The guys puked, all three. Gulls circled, more than usual. That's how I knew. Cries so loud, Skip closed the dead man's eyes.
You didn't touch him other than that?
Andrew shook his head, then stepped aside. The guys were so sick I had to try and cover him on the ride in.
Walk pulled the towel back, then fought for breath.
Milton.
Bloated, mottled, eyes swollen over.
You all right, Walk?
Jesus.
You know him?
Walk nodded. He thought of the blood at Dark's place. They'd match it soon enough, he had little doubt. More pieces to figure. So uneven.
Sit down for a bit. You don't look so good.
They sat on the deck and waited for the coroner. Andrew passed Walk a beer, which he sipped as the color returned to him.
Better?
You don't seem all that shaken up, Walk said.
It's my third body.
Serious?
One in Jersey, and then I worked the Keys. A lot going on in Cape Haven.
Too much.
Walk held a bottle to his head and soothed the ache forming. His hand shook as he drank.
He did not even try and hide it.
I saw you at the funeral. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to come over.
Andrew had stood at the back, head bowed,
stayed a few minutes, then slipped out.
Andrew waved him off.
It was sad, the whole thing, when I heard about her. I thought about the kids. Even back then, the boy was a baby, but the girl used to glare at me.
Walk thought of Duchess.
You know who did it, this guy?
Maybe.
Andrew asked nothing else. They watched a boat head in, low lights over calm water. Andrew held his bottle to the dying sun. It had been 5 years since I last saw her, but I still thought about her. It wasn't even the one that got away, nothing like that. You know, when you want to save someone, but you don't have the first clue how to do it?
You saw her a while.
A few months, maybe. Met her at a bar, watched her sing, then bought her a drink. Thought she was nice looking and funny and kind of damaged, which wasn't all that unusual in the kinds of bars I drink in.
And then?
We were together, but not, almost like friends. I wanted more.
Walk watched him.
Sex, we never did.
Walk glanced over at a speedboat, at a place, white and garish.
No doubt a vacationer bringing out their toy, the old and new, colliding in a way that still pained him.
For sale sign.
Walk hoped whoever bought it took it someplace far away. She was beautiful. Sex is something, right? I know we don't talk about it, but it's something. In a relationship, without it, what have you got?
Walk thought of Martha, the nature of their friendship, the undercurrent that pushed him every time he saw her, dragging his mind someplace it shouldn't have been.
She had closed off the parts that were his, her mind, gone to ground with the child she once lost.
Did she give a reason? Walk said.
She said you get one great love, and you're lucky if you find that. Anything less might as well have been nothing.
Walk thought of Star. She didn't get her happy ending. Each night, he prayed her children would.
Robin was nervous the day of the meet. They lay awake the night before, and Robin talked to Peter and Lucy like he knew them well. He decided he might like to be a doctor, too, that or a teacher. She told him to sleep, that he wanted to be fresh. They talked another hour. She laid out his shorts and t-shirt. He exchanged them for his smart slacks and funeral shirt. He tried on his bow tie, discarded it. He shined his best shoes with spit and paper towels. She tried to untangle his hair, gave up, and pressed it to a parting. She wore jeans and a top. He yelled till she changed into a dress. He chose a yellow bow for her hair, then asked if she should wear a little makeup. He ate no breakfast, just sipped his juice at the window.
You need to relax.
What if they don't show?
They will.
The drive to the park, Robin was quiet, staring out. Duchess saw his small fingers crossed. They pulled into the lot, stepped out to sun, birdsong, and gentle breeze. Peter was short, a little overweight, but he carried it well. Lucy smiled in the kind of wholesome way that made Duchess think she was born to be a mother or a third-grade teacher. Shelley waved, and they began to walk over. Peter turned and whistled. A black lab looked up, one paw in the air, then began to run.
They've got a dog, Robin said it in a whisper. Just try and be cool.
Robin looked up at her. She waited a little, then nodded, and he took off, running at the lab and waving like a madman.
Shit.
Don't worry, Shelley said.
He wanted to bring his suitcase in case they want to take us right off.
Shit, Shelley agreed. It could have been awkward when they met, like the other times. Careful handshakes and too much eye contact. But Peter and Lucy were warm and open right off. They introduced themselves, talked about how far they'd come, driven up with Jet, their lab, from their small town in Wyoming. Peter set off with Robin and Jet, staying just about in sight as they crossed over long grass. Robin kept looking back and waving till Duchess waved back. Duchess did not say anything wrong, just did not really say anything at all. Lucy told her she liked her dress, and Duchess told her thank you. She asked about school, and Duchess said it was nice. And about living with the Price family, and Duchess said that was nice too. The whole time she watched and worried, Robin taking Peter's hand and clutching it tight, then petting Jed and smiling too wide. When Lucy mentioned they kept chickens, Duchess hoped and prayed Peter didn't tell Robin the same thing. 10 minutes later, Robin turned and mouthed chickens to her. Duchess gave him a smile, and Robin clapped his hands. They kept to a safe limit, no talk of the past, though Lucy said she was sorry about Hal, about everything. She told Hal her own mother passed when she was small. When it was time Robin hugged Peter so long, Duchess had to intervene. Robin talked the journey back, not stopping for air. He said Peter mentioned meeting again, how he'd let him hold Jet's leash next time. Shelley told him he did good, that Peter and Lucy said how much they liked meeting them. And, Robin said, we'll see, but I've got that good feeling again, Shelley said. Robin clapped his hands, then he jumped from the car and ran up the path to the Price house. Mrs. Price met him at the door and smiled for Shelley.
You shouldn't say shit like that, not till you know.
It's important to stay positive, Shelley said. Duchess rubbed her eyes, the year-long, the uncertainty draining. She was not sure if she believed in God, but that night she prayed. Chapter 34. Walk found her at the church. He stood by the door, rested a hand on the old clapboard, and looked to the water, the flowers on graves. Martha sat alone on the front bench, her eyes on the stained glass in the pulpit, the same seat she used to take each Sunday morning when her father was minister. Walk took his seat at the back, silent, not wanting to disturb her. He had spent the morning on the phone, first to Boyd, to fill him in on Milton. He told him about the link to Dark, that they went hunting together, and that Milton was seen entering and leaving Dark's place. He could not mention the blood, but Boyd said he would work on it, get a warrant. And then he'd called a trial lawyer over in Clear Lake, a guy named Carter, one of Martha's contacts. Carter wanted to meet with Vincent King. Walk could not make that happen. It was looming, weeks away, not long enough for anyone to prepare. I need you, he said, and the old church carried his words, causing her to stop, lift her head, but not turn. She finished speaking whatever silent words she had chosen. He walked down. Together they sat before the old cross and the sainted neighbors. I need you for the trial.
I know.
He looked down at his tie, gold clip, starred collar. He had never felt so weak. Or maybe he always had, but did not realize it till then. He had seen Kendrick again, up the dose. There was no way to stop what would come.
I'll make mistakes, and they will matter.
I know. It's unfair.
It's more than that. It's life and death. I once wanted to stand up front and help people that way. A port of call when times were good and bad.
He took that from me. My father.
You could have still... She cut him off with eyes full of tears. I didn't want to live a lie.
Milton is dead. The butcher. I think Dark killed him. I think Dark killed Hal to get to the children.
He's worried the boy will remember.
Walk nodded. Dark can't come back here now. He owes money to people, bad people. He'd run the plates, this time got a hit. The sedan was registered to a construction company in Riverside. One of the directors was linked to a known crime family. Dark's problems would not go away. She looked at him then.
Take it to Boyd. They need protecting.
I have. He still doesn't buy it.
Because Vincent King is in the way.
But if he were innocent, if we can get him off.
Shit, Walk, the best trial lawyer in the country couldn't get him off.
If Vincent is innocent, then Dark is coming for Robin Radley, not Duchess. Walk closed his eyes to the tremors, rubbed his neck, the muscles so stiff it hurt to turn his head.
You want to tell me what's wrong now, Walk? You think I haven't noticed all this time? You look tired. You've lost a lot of weight.
It's just the stress.
Say that enough and you'll start to believe it.
I won't. He watched an old lady pass the door, a kneel and cross before she went on. Maybe she slept better after.
You're all purpose, Walk. I used to look at you and see everything inside.
I want to be that man again. I just... it's all changing. I'm losing myself. I feel it every day. I used to think everything was changing around me. I drove past taller land. Hard to imagine all those homes. People need to live somewhere, Walk.
Second homes, they'll push the town further away.
You like things how they are. I've seen your house, your office. You cling hard enough to the past.
There was a time when things were better, when we were kids. Don't you remember that? I saw my life fixed. Cop in the town I grew up in, wife and kids, Little League, camping out.
And Vincent across the street, maybe your wives or friends. You vacation together, you barbecue, watch your kids in the surf.
I still see that moment. 30 years and it's clear. It's so... I can touch it, but I can't change it.
Tell me about the Vincent you remember.
There's nothing he wouldn't do for me.
That kind of blind loyalty.
He had girls, but Stara was the one for him. He was quick with his fists, but never started the fight. He could go quiet, sometimes for days, and I knew his father was on him. And he was funny. He was everything to me. He was my brother. He is my brother.
He could not read her eyes then. Outside, the sun shone, the bird sang.
I thought I'd marry you, Martha, you know that?
I know that.
You're on my mind first thing in the morning and when I lie in bed at night.
Masturbation is a sin.
Don't say masturbation in church.
You like me because I'm safe, Walk. I'm the mirror of you. I don't change, no surprises, simple and dependable, till our idyllic childhood was shattered.
That's not true.
It is, but there's nothing wrong with that. We help people, Walk. I can think of no better way to live a life.
So you'll do it? She did not answer.
You think we'd have been together in another life? This one ain't over yet, Chief.
She reached across and calmed the shake of his hand with the warmth of hers.
Peter and Lucy picked them up from the Price house. Shelley sat with them in the SUV on the rear bench, busying herself with paperwork as they drove. Peter and Robin talked endlessly during the ride about Jet and how he was afraid of birds, about a patient Peter saw who had hiccups a full year.
"Did you try scaring him?" Robin said.
"Pete's face is enough to scare anyone."
Lucy winked at Duchess in the mirror.
For her part, Duchess smiled back, though she could not manage a laugh.
That morning, Mary Lou told her there wasn't a chance some nice doctor and his wife would want a troubled girl in their house, not a girl that makes shitty grades and likes playing with guns.
Duchess had taken it, eaten her cornflakes in silence, while Mary Lou walked over and yanked the power cable from the back of the television they were watching. They pulled over short of anywhere, idling at the side of the road, while Peter and Lucy turned in their seats.
Peter read from a guidebook.
"Going to the Sun Road, you ready?"
"Ready,"
Robin said. Peter looked at Duchess and smiled.
Beside her, Robin squeezed her hand tight.
"Ready."
Going to the Sun Road spanned 50 miles of towering rock.
Light met them at the east tunnel, two mountains parting like the opening of a show.
They crawled along sheer drops, the road twisting to nothing ahead, a roller coaster ride so beautiful Duchess closed her eyes. They traversed valleys, waterfalls loud beside, wildflowers so many colors. Cliffside trails fell to limpid lakes. Tall pines leaned with the hill like they were trying not to fall.
Lucy pulled out an Nikon and snapped off shot after shot.
Behind, Shelley leaned forward and placed a hand on Duchess's shoulder, gave it a squeeze like she knew the girl needed it. They pulled off at Jackson Glacier. Lucy took a hamper from the trunk and laid a blanket on the grass.
Robin sat with Peter and they ate sandwiches and potato chips, drank juice boxes, and watched waving shadows over the lagoon.
"Grandpa would like it here," Robin said. Duchess ate her sandwich, thanked Lucy, and tried to smile. At times, she felt so far from a place she had never been, like home was somewhere out there and calling, she just did not know how to find it.
She wiped her eyes on her sleeve, felt Lucy watching her, and maybe wondering, how fucked up is this kid?
Do I really want her in my life, for now and always?
Are you okay, Duchess? Lucy said.
Yes, thank you. She wanted it to sound sincere, but didn't know how. She wanted to convey it that she could live quietly in their life, not disrupt, not impact at all, so long as they loved her brother and cared for him. She stood and walked to the fencing, leaned over and watched shallow water and blue stone beneath, purple flowers that bled with bright, a sweep of lodgepole serried. Lucy joined her, said nothing, and Duchess was grateful. On the ride back, they slowed for mountain goat and bighorn sheep.
What if they fall? Robin said.
Don't worry, Peter said. I'm a doctor. Lucy rolled her eyes. Duchess studied Peter, the way he drove so cautiously, how natural his smile was. She imagined a life ordered where everything fit just right. There was a calm to him, unhurried. People would pass him by and he didn't notice or care. She thought he'd make a decent father for Robin. When they got back, she watched Robin hug Peter, arms locked tight around his waist, and she saw the look that passed between them, Peter and Lucy. Duchess knew it with some certainty. They had found their new home. Chapter 35. They worked long into the night, Martha making coffee at midnight, then again at 2. They'd spent the afternoon in Fairmount County with Vincent. Martha had recorded, tried to coach and prompt, but there was no way Vincent would take to the stand, so he'd said nothing. It was an exercise in futility, but Walk had hoped maybe seeing that Martha believed in him would give Vincent the excuse he needed to finally unload everything that had happened that night. It was on the way in that Cuddy had caught up with him, handed him an envelope. "What is this?" Walk asked.
"Vincent, he got mail. Doesn't say much of anything. Thought you might want to take a look."
Walk had waited till he was alone in the waiting room before he'd unfolded the paper. A letter, typed, but no doubt it was from Dark. "Funds are hard to come by, but I haven't given up. I know I'm letting you down, so I've found a way to make things right. Good luck at trial. Sometimes wishes do come true." He'd read it a dozen times, looked for something that was not there, something he didn't already know. Dark had a conscience, maybe? It no longer mattered. When he handed the letter over, Vincent had shoved it straight into his pocket, turned back to Martha, and changed the subject. A line was drawn, and Walk was clearly on the other side of it. With the trial on the horizon, Martha spent her days prepping, calling in favors, even driving down to see her old professor who lived in Cameron County. She and Walk set up an office in his basement, covered every wall with papers and photos and maps. She read trial transcripts, practiced her opening statement so many times, Walk knew every word of it. Martha knew the DA by reputation and knew she'd have been prepping for months. The facts were cogent. Vincent King knew the victim and was found in her house covered in her blood. There was talk of subpoenaing Dickie Dark, but they could not find him. The DA already had his statement. There was nothing tying him to the scene, and doing so would see Dee Lane called to the stand, and Walk would not do that to her children. No doubt he would be called as a state witness. They mapped out local lives and where they intersected. The DA would claim Vincent had dumped the gun in the water. Martha could prove that was not possible in the time he had. It was a small win. They needed it. At 9, Walk sat on a chair and felt the tremor first in his left hand, then his right leg. He closed his eyes like he could will it away. He slowed his breathing and cursed his body for such betrayal at so crucial a time. "Are you okay, Walk?" He went to speak, but felt it in his face, his jaw and lips, a tingling, then the same tremble of his body. It would pass, but not in time. He felt tears, hot and shameful. He tried to raise a hand to wipe them back before she saw, but his hand would not move. He closed his eyes and willed himself from that room and that town and maybe that life. He thought back to being 10 years old, riding his bike with Vincent, the two of them crossing each other and smiling the open way only children can. And then he felt hands on his, not firm, but there, warm. He opened his eyes and saw Martha on her knees before him, her beautiful eyes even filled with tears.
"It's all right,"
He shook his head. It was not all right, and would not be all right again. It had been a dozen years since he cried, but right then, when he looked around at the perfect mess his life had become, he sobbed like he was 15 and Vincent had been sent away all over again. "Why do you carry Vincent with you?"
"It's on me.
That night after I found Sissy, I went to his place and saw the car. I knew right off it was him."
"I know. You told me.
But I could have woken him. He would have handed himself in. It would have looked better to that judge and jury. The judge would have been lenient. Instead, I took it to Chief Dubois. Who does that? Who the fuck does that to their friend?"
Martha took his face in her hands.
"You did what was right, Walk. You always have done. The way you looked out for Star, even when I know she would have pushed you away. It's something special. To do that is something special."
"We endure, right? That's what we do for those we love."
"The world would be a better place with more people like you in it." She spoke so sincerely he could have believed her, but instead he looked over her shoulder at the board and his friend. They did not have time left for any of this. He kissed her suddenly without thinking. He started to apologize, but then her lips found his, and there was something frantic in the way she kissed him, like she'd been waiting 30 years. She pushed him back, and then pulled him to his feet, took his hand, and led him up to the bedroom. He wanted to stop her, to tell her she was making another mistake, that she was better than him in every way. But when she kissed him, he felt it. 15 all over again. The news came in late, Walk cell dragging him from the deepest sleep he'd had in a long time. He sat up. Martha stirred beside him. He listened in silence, then cut the call and lay back.
"What?"
He stared at the ceiling.
"The autopsy on Milton. He drowned. Nothing else, no other injuries. He just drowned."
Martha got to her feet quick, despite the dark sky.
"This is it, Walk."
"What?"
"The game changer we've been waiting for."
That night, Robin woke, crying, the sheets wet through. The nightmare that gripped him so vivid he could not speak for the first moments Duchess held him.
"It was Mom. I was locked in my bedroom and I heard Mom and she was screaming. I want Peter and Lucy. I want Mom and Grandpa. I want to go back and for this to be the nightmare."
She hushed him and kissed his head. After she helped him wash, she pulled plastic sheeting from the other bed and they settled in there. She left the drapes open and they watched a night sky of plentiful stars and the fullest moon. "It'll be okay, you know."
"You think they'll take us to Wyoming?"
"Your future isn't written yet, Robin. You can be anything. You're a prince."
"I want to be a doctor like Peter."
"You'd make a good doctor." After he fell asleep, she sat down by the window and took out her school book. She did her history paper as best she could. She was struggling again. She looked over at her brother and knew without doubt he was the color to her shade. The next day, as they walked toward school, Mary Lou took turns leaning into the other kids' ears and whispering something that made them wrinkle their noses tight and laugh.
"What is it?"
Robin said to Duchess. "Nothing, probably something dumb she saw on TV." It continued the whole walk, along Hickory and into Grove Street. They collected 4 more kids, the Wilson twins, Emma Brown and her brother Adam. Each time Mary Lou did that same thing, brought them close and whispered, watching in delight as they recoiled, then laughed.
"Ew, gross," Emma said.
Robin looked up at Duchess again.
"Henry didn't want me walking with the big kids today."
"Henry's an asshole." Duchess stared at them as they walked, at Mary Lou, who kept looking back and smirking, and Kelly and Emma and fucking Henry and his cunt friends. She felt that cold lead in her veins begin to melt and turn molten as they reached the school gates, and Mary Lou took her whispers to a cluster of kids from her class. They all turned. Giggles turned to open laughs, faces pulled in disgust. Duchess moved then. Robin grabbed her hand tight and pulled her back.
"Please,"
he said. She knelt in the grass.
"Robin?"
He went to speak and she smoothed his curls back.
"What am I?"
He met her eye.
"An outlaw."
And what do outlaws do?
They don't take any crap. No one pushes us around. No one laughs at us. I stand up for you. Our blood is the same.
Fear in his eyes.
You head into class now.
She gave him a gentle push, and he turned and walked into the building, reluctant, nervous.
She stood, dropped her bag, and stared at Mary Lou, and then she walked toward her. Girls moved, Emma and Kelly and Allison Myers. They parted for her because they'd heard the stories.
You want to tell me what's so funny?
Boys came over and fanned out around them. Mary Lou did not back off, just carried that same smirk.
You stink of piss.
What?
Your bed, it was you last night. I saw my mother washing the sheet from your bed. You pissed yourself like some retard.
Duchess heard the bell ring. No one moved.
I did.
There were murmurs, laughter, and a couple of shouts she couldn't make out.
You admit it?
Mary Lou said.
Sure. See, I told you it wasn't bullshit, she said to Kelly.
Then she turned and the group began to move.
But you know why I did it?
They stopped. Heads turned. Mary Lou watched her, uncertain of what was coming, but tensing up, ready.
So your father wouldn't touch me?
Stone silence.
Liar,
Mary Lou said. Kelly and Emma inched away.
You fucking liar!
She screamed, then ran at Duchess. Mary Lou was used to shoving matches, maybe some hair pulling, nothing more than that. She did not count on meeting an outlaw in the schoolyard. Duchess dropped her with one savage punch. Mary Lou crumpled, her tooth in the grass, the other kids hollering as blood spilled from her mouth. Duchess stood still and calm, watching her prey, kind of hoping she'd get up and they'd go again. When it was done, when the principal and two teachers ran out and took a look at Mary Lou, beaten bloody, tooth missing, the new girl standing over her and smiling, they hauled her inside and called the Prices and Shelley. Duchess sat alone, waiting, wishing Hal would walk down the hallway and straighten out her mess. Out the window, she watched Montana sky and wondered about Walk and the Cape. What kind of sky they saw that morning, when everything changed once again. Mrs. Price arrived, crying, her husband's arm around her.
No more, we're not doing this anymore,
she said between breaths, glaring at Duchess like she wanted the girl dead. Mr. Price glared too, so Duchess flipped him off. Shelley got there and hugged her. Duchess stood still and did not hug her back. The adults convened in the principal's office, gold plaque on a door so heavy Duchess could make out nothing more than the odd raised voice. Mrs. Price going off, out of my house, not one more night, safety of my own children. Duchess was called in once the Prices stepped out, looking away as they passed her like she did not live beneath their roof. Shelley asked her about what she said about Mr. Price. She told the truth. She said it to shut Mary Lou up. Shelley backed her as best she could, the losing horse, but still she threw support her way. The principal was aghast. Grave allegations, no place for violence in their school. She would not be welcome back. Duchess flipped him off for good measure.
You all right?
Shelley said as they walked from the school. I'm alive. Duchess did not like leaving Robin there. She climbed into Shelley's car and sat silent as they drove to the Price house. Mrs. Price stood in their kitchen, on guard. Mr. Price had run Mary Lou to the emergency room to be checked over and see about her tooth. Threats were made, legal and otherwise. Duchess was ushered up to the attic to pack their belongings. It did not take long. Her case had been ready since the day they arrived. She left the house without saying another word to Mrs. Price, who stood on the step, dabbing at her eyes. Shelley drove in silence back to the office, where she worked the phone madly, while Duchess sat on an old wooden chair and watched hours pass by. At 3, Shelley headed out and left Duchess under the watch of a couple of older ladies who smiled her way every 10 minutes. Shelley returned with Robin. He'd been crying. At 5, they got a place. Shelley spoke without emotion, tired and beaten by 100 other files, other cases, other lives just as lost. It's a group home, she said.